Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
With the most, Nikki Kalula. We're doing another pandemic episode of Wake Up Hollywood, virtually, socially distanced, so it's all good. We're going to welcome tonight, we got some very special guests. We have songwriters Larry John McNally and Harry Waters and Anne Rinaldi of a Prog Fest, right? Anne, did I say that right?
Prog Stock.
Prog Stock. I knew I was going to mess that up. All right. Larry and Harry, you guys should have your own radio shows with names like that, man.
We're available.
Maybe we will. If they pass
available nightly.
Let's do it.
I love it. How did you two meet? Before we get into the music, how did you guys collaborate and meet first?
That's a good question. Larry normally fields this one. He tells it quite beautifully.
Okay, so there was a party across the street from my house in L.A. A music guy named Greg Wells, who's a producer, done a lot of stuff. I've actually never been to his house before or after, but it was all music people, and there was a guy playing a digital church organ. Everyone was quite excited about it, and I said, you know, that's okay, but what I really like is the Hammond B3 organ. And he, I don't know who this guy was, he said, come with me. And he said, I want you to meet this guy. He didn't say who this guy was, but this guy, Harry, seemed quite nice, and his wife was nice. So we got talking, didn't know his history or background. And he lived close to me, which in L.A. is a big deal, and had kids. So we started getting together and working on songs, talking about music, talking about kids, everything. And it unfolded that he had toured with his dad. I actually had never owned a Pink Floyd album, so I wasn't familiar with
it. Yeah. That's crazy.
I just got my first Pink Floyd album about 2 weeks ago.
What did you start with out of curiosity?
I love used vinyl, so I went to, Harry and I played with Nick Mason, the drummer, and they played this killer song called something
to do with
Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun.
I'd
never heard that before. I love this song. I heard Nick play it, and I said, man. So I saw that was on an album. I don't know if this is right. I think it's called Uma Guma. Is that the name of the album, maybe?
It's actually pronounced Uma Guma. It's one of those ones that everyone mispronounces. People think it's called Uma Guma, but it's pronounced Uma Guma.
That's my
So I got that album. And Pink, I bought Dark Side of the Moon. I think there's a song called Breathe on there. I'm not sure.
There is, yeah.
It's a really fantastic song.
Beautiful, beautiful song. So I met Harry. I didn't know anything about that, but we talked about the music of New Orleans. Harry plays that style. I used to live there. Aaron Nuttles.
Where did you live in New Orleans?
I lived in Metairie. Metairie on the outside. And my sister... I borrowed my sister's car and drove to Alan Toussaint's studio with my tape.
Wow.
And knocked on the door, and Aaron Neville recorded my song. So that's
crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway. You say it so matter of fact, like it's no big deal, but man, those are music legends, New Orleans legends, just insane. That's insane.
Here's to the beauty of naivete. I wouldn't dare do that now. But now they have security guards. You wouldn't get through the front door now. It was just a little house. And someone knocked, opened the door and looked at me like, who is this guy? What does he want? You know?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Harry, I know you're way into Professor Longhair.
Yeah, absolutely.
The way
yeah.
I got introduced to Professor Longhair was I was in New Orleans and I went to my favorite restaurant, Coop's. Do you know Coop's on Decatur?
No, I've only been there once for like two or three days on a sort of business trip.
And it's like a little, it's like a little greasy spoon. A good friend of mine told me, "Yo, you gotta try the food there." It's still my favorite restaurant. It's one of the only cookbooks I have from New Orleans. Yeah. And there's a big picture of Professor Longhair, and it's the coolest picture of him just jamming out. And I just got all this music in New Orleans and just fell down the rabbit hole. And it's been a long, long, windy road of just great funk and soul music. Harry, I wanted to ask you, too, how did you get into that stuff? You were raised in England. I can hear the accents. Whereabouts in England were you raised?
It was southwest London in Richmond. Richmond is the sort of nearest, biggest kind of town, you know. But I was actually raised in a little town called East Sheen. But Richmond's the nearest one. So that's where I grew up. And Richmond Park, like right on the edge of Richmond Park. So, which is, I mean, it's huge. It's like 10 miles across. You know, it's an absolute, a really, really big park. So that was beautiful. And I got into, how did I get into that music? I don't remember hearing it for the first time, but when I was learning to play, I listened to a lot of Dr. John and Professor Longhair and Mead Lux Lewis, Jelly Roll Morton, Fats Waller, sort of Fats Domino, that kind of thing. It was sort of boogie, Scott Joplin. You know, I used to sight read his songs, and that's sort of how I learned to play. So I just love listening to it. You know, I don't remember though how I ever first came across it. I don't remember. Probably you know, my mum's record collection.
There was a guy I saw at Jazz Fest, Henry Butler, and I just fell in love with his playing, and it was so crazy because I saw that he was like listed in the phone book, and I was like, yo, man, I would love to just come and jam with you or record with you or work with you or learn from you, whatever. And he was just like old and on the road. And he was just like, yeah, man, I'm just, if you can catch me, I'll be here. You know, so, you know, he was one of those cats where it was just like, you know, New Orleans, it's in the water, it's in the food, it's in the soul of the city. So you it's easy to gravitate towards that style of music. And man, you can't go wrong with any of those players that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Larry, how did New Orleans affect or influence you as far as music and sound and writing?
Well, I always loved R&B the most of all, kinds of music. And I listened to at that time it was very specific to the city, Memphis, Stax, Killer Sound, Detroit, Motown, Philadelphia had a sound. And Muscle Shoals, which heavily influenced me. But New Orleans had such an earthy R&B sound. Yeah. And that really captured me. It was not slick at all. And why I grew up in Maine, so Irish guy from Maine, why that would move me so, I don't know. But it did and still does.
What city in Maine, out of curiosity?
I'm from Bangor, Maine.
Okay.
In fact, that's where I am right now. So.
Oh, that's amazing. I've played in Portland, Maine.
Portland's a very cool city now. A lot of great venues, and it's become quite sophisticated now. This is not sophisticated where I am, but it's a great place to be with the world going crazy. So,
of course.
You know, yeah.
So you guys both must have vibed on your love of New Orleans and funk and soul music.
Yeah.
How did you kind of figure out what you were going to write together and how you were going to collaborate?
The great thing about Harry and I is we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah.
We don't have to discuss. Sometimes we do when we're on tour and stuff, but we just started playing.
It just kind of happened. Yeah. I remember I was living in a different house before I moved here, the last place, and Larry used to come over and we used to sit in my kind of little studio. And before we hadn't written anything together. I think maybe even the first time he came over, you know, and I charted up the song that he wrote for the Eagles, "I Love to Watch a Woman Dance," which I've always loved. So I had a listen to it, did a chart, and he came over and said, "Hey, let's play through this." And we played, and he obviously can remember how to play. So we played through that, and it just something just clicked. Something just felt really right. And I thought, fuck, we've got to, let's just write, let's just come up with some other chords. I don't know, right? That's, for me, that's how it sort of started, you know? Do you remember that, Larry? Do you remember that first time that we played together or not?
I don't remember all of that. I you know, it sounds familiar while you say that.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't really remember that.
Yeah.
I think the thing about Harry and I is that Harry loves Bill Evans, the jazz pianist.
Oh, yeah.
And so do I. And Harry loves the funk of England, so do I. And, you know, the song is king for me. Yeah. So when we started playing, there's this element of jazz, there's this element of New Orleans, there's this song structure thing going. So it was a very natural combination without having to say much about it.
Yeah. It's never that hard to write with Larry. You know, we never really sort of struggle and, you know, comes sort of quite naturally, you know, the music part of it.
Well, it's this. There's a lot of like soundscaping and kind of there's a little bit more like a progressive kind of vibe to what you guys are doing too, which I love as well. You know, I checked out some stuff on YouTube and I was like, oh man, these guys are serious cats, because you can just tell. Like, I think the best part about music is you can hear people's influences coming through music. And I think when it's like, you know, kind of disguised and kind of exploring new material at the same time, there's a power in that. So I definitely heard that in how you guys collaborate. And there's a complementary thing that you guys are both doing, I think, musically. Mm. So I can tell there's some kind of a telepathic connection. Music vibes are swirling around.
Well, we've both done our homework for one thing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Anne, you've been putting together this Progstock Festival for a while. Tell me how this came about and how you discovered these guys.
Well, my my partner, Tom Palmieri, and I co-produced the Progstock Festival in Rahway, New Jersey every October. But of course, we have this little pandemic going on that's getting in the way of all these wonderful live events. No luck this year staging a live festival. Instead, we're doing a virtual series.
That's awesome.
I met Harry and Larry, which is it's a musical festival cruise on a ship sails out of Florida every year. Unfortunately, also canceled this year. We met on Cruise to the Edge 2017, I believe.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think that's right. Mm. And, you know, Harry was playing with Dave Kirzner, and I was tour managing Dave Kirzner's band at the time. So I was on the cruise kind of behind the scenes running the show and making sure everybody got on the ship and
on the bus to the ship.
And the bus to the
ship. Saved us. A bus left without that. I can't remember what happened, but we like got left behind. The bus had something happened. I can't remember. But
the guy wouldn't let me on the bus.
We had a bus driver that was in. Their names were not on the list of people to allow on the bus. So he left them on the curb at the hotel.
He took one look at me and he said, you are not getting on this bus.
You're right. Because I came down to the lobby and came out, and there's Larry standing there. I'm like, this has been fun, man. I'm looking forward to getting home. And then Larry's like, I think the bus has just gone. What do you mean the bus has just gone? Like, what are you talking about? You
know, that guy needs to get fired. You can't be too good at security where you don't let the artist in. That's just not good.
Yeah, really.
So they gave me a call, and I called the guy that's kind of in charge of operations for the cruise and said, we have a problem here.
Seriously.
Harry and Larry are standing on the curb outside the hotel, and we're all at the ship. And we kind of need them to be at the ship.
We need our own bus. We need our own bus.
He did. Yeah.
I'm sure the bus driver was very nice when he picked you up.
He was very apologetic. I'm so sorry. And so he was the nice guy. He wasn't just being a dick. You know, he just made a mistake. He was a nice guy.
Well, I'm sure everybody heckled you guys a little bit just being late for various reasons, but especially because of that. Like, wait a minute, you didn't pass the audition. You need to stand outside for a little bit longer. Well, that's amazing. I think one of the coolest things I want to ask you is how do your both creative processes combine to kind of work through songs and kind of know when something is fully arranged or written? Like, Larry, do you write songs beforehand and kind of bring it into Harry? And Harry, do you kind of have certain soundscapes or ideas or vibes that you're kind of like playing with? Maybe kind of like all in the moment, off the cuff?
No, it's both ways, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, both ways. Like in the first records, a bunch of the songs we wrote in the room, absolutely, from the initial seed of creation, we just came up with them together there in the room. I think, if memory serves me correct, like A Night Much Deeper, which I think was one of the first songs we wrote, that we just kind of wrote together then and there, you know? But then other ones, for example, Blackout on the first record, I came up with the chords and I played this kind of riff pattern in my left hand, sort of octave D thing, and I sort of had all the chords kind of fleshed out. And Larry went, oh, that's cool. And then he wrote the melody and the lyrics. But then there are other songs, for example, Distortion, so which is the opposite, where Larry had already written this cool, funky riff. You know, Larry kind of had the chords fleshed out for that one. He came and brought it to me, and then maybe we worked on the B section together or something, you know? So a bit of both, you know?
You know, I have a new song, Harry, that I don't know how it would go, but it's a very simple, almost folk song. Yeah. And what I want you to do is take it and change keys with it maybe two or three times and improvise off the melody of it in different keys and then come back around to the lyric. I mean, we'll see how it goes.
Perfect. But there you go. That's the writing process right there. You've just been privy to a bit of, you know, private writing, you know. Yes. That's how it works.
I was literally the fly on the wall for that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's quite good. I think it's going to be great. And listening to that Dark Side of the Moon record, now really, I don't know who did what or who's responsible for what.
Yeah.
But the guy, Richard Wright, who seemed to be the quiet type, I'm not sure. Maybe he wasn't quiet at all. But he played beautiful keyboard stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of like to have Harry do that kind of thing on this song. Well, let's see what happens.
Oh, yeah. I actually just transcribed Great Gig in the Sky and put it on Instagram because I was like, man, I learned this like 20 years ago and I never documented it. I need to just document it because those parts and those chords, I mean, I love when musicians tell stories with chords and then they can do it with production and then they can do it with licks or lyrics or melodies. Yeah. You know, it's like that's like the true testament, I think, of the entire package when everything is there, you know. So I love that you guys are able to kind of like collaborate and take kind of like delegate on some level, but also allow each artist to kind of like, you know, blossom in a different way. Do you guys bounce off each other a lot or do you kind of have like some structure and know when you have room to improvise or structures that you're making?
A good question. I think we bounce off each other quite a lot. I mean, it's obviously hard at the moment because we're not physically together, you know. I've done almost no writing during this, lockdown. But I've been doing huge amounts of practice, classical, almost 95% classical. But Larry's been writing like a fiend.
And you know what's interesting is Harry did a live virtual show solo. I don't remember if he sang or not, but he played.
I did, maybe. I can't remember.
Well, he played the song that we do called Black Cadillac, and he did all these improvs that I've never heard him do before because that's not the way we play it live. And all of the improvs to me, and there must be at least 20, are the bits and pieces of new songs.
Yeah.
So when we get together, I'll have a ton of ideas. I want to refer to that tape and pull what Harry played. He was just riffing, but each one of them was a song seed.
Yeah.
So when we get together, we have a lot. It won't take long. We'll have an album's worth of new material. I bet it'll take a week.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, too, to see, like, how every artist kind of responds with their creative endeavors during this pandemic, because it's like on one level, it's like everybody's halted. But in another level, it kind of opens doors to kind of like maybe hone down on more of the discipline of practicing or hone down more on the process of writing and arranging. Yeah. Are there parts of your musicianship during the pandemic that you kind of explored or had more time to kind of focus on that you didn't before?
I mean, for me, I guess, my kid, you know, I have young kids, they're at home now for the summer holidays. So I sort of have less time because of that. But they were out of school for about a month before, you know, the summer holidays started. So they've been at home for however many months it's been now. So I sort of have less time. If I can get in two to three solid hours of practice at the moment, then I'm happy with that. But when they're at school, if I'm not working, I mean, I'm working most of the time composing, but if I happen to be in between jobs or I don't have something coming up or Larry's not here, I'll practice all day while my kids are out. Six hours, you know, I can happily do, and I love that. So I have less time to play, you know, now that my kids are home, but you just have to be okay with that and sort of philosophical about it. I love spending time with my family and kids, so I just accept that that's what my practice routine is like at the moment, you know.
Yeah, it's good to have balance. I think something that we musicians we forget about is like having that balance in life. It's like understanding, just being around nature, for example, or being with family or friends. Something like about that grounds us in many of the same ways that music does. Larry, how about you? While you've been in the pandemic, have you been able to like explore any realms or styles of music or just ways to create that you didn't before?
Well, yes, my kids are 18 and 23 and not living with me. I'm absolutely alone with no social life whatsoever. I get up in the morning, I start writing, and I'm in my own world 24 hours a day. And I've been I'm deeply into writing. I've got a ton of ideas. It doesn't matter what time of day or night it is. I'll just stay up late. And I'm filling notebooks with ideas. I have so much stuff. It's really great in a way. I mean, there's a lot of people that I deeply miss. But there's nothing I can do about that right now. And so I normally have so many distractions in the day. I'll write for an hour and then the phone will ring and I gotta go get my car fixed or meet with this, do this or that. And I have no distractions right now. And I'm very lucky to have this moment in time because whenever they lift the quarantine, man, I'm not staying home ever again the rest of my life.
Party animals coming out. Well, let's play something. What do you guys want to play first?
Play Pompadour.
Pompadour?
Yeah.
All right, Ronan, let's play Pompadour and let's turn off the original sound so we can hear the track.
Just a song, stand by your man. Then you ran, hold me like a handle. I argue with the dead. I shouted at the TV. I loved you. You loved me. You gave it. Inside of me every night and day.
Beautiful, gave me chills.
Thank you.
Man, it's got such a Van Morrison, Elvis Costello kind of feel and vibe. Man, that was great. What a great track. Well,
we love Van Morrison and Elvis Costello.
I can hear it. I can hear it in the sound, man. It definitely, the arrangement, the vibe, the songwriting, the vocals, melody, everything.
We wrote it for Amy Winehouse. That's what the story behind it is.
Oh, that's cool. Dude, it's amazing. It's amazing. And she recorded that song. You guys just
didn't know. I mean we wrote it just after she died. It was so terrible. So it inspired the song.
Oh, that's awesome! It's a beautiful track. It's so
thank you.
Tell me, kind of like what the creative process was about it. Like, what it, you know, you said Amy Winehouse inspired it. How did you want to like paint the moment or kind of pay homage to her?
You know, the interesting part story behind it is really the recording of it. You know, a lot of times I write lyrics first, and I remember thinking, I like the word pompadour, but it seemed like, well, this is kind of a strange word. I don't know if this is good or really bad. It could be good. And that happens to me all the time. And I've come up with some bad ones, no question about it. But I presented it to Harry, and it was actually the wrong key for my voice, and we changed it around, but it was the right key for the piano. And somehow me singing in my wrong key with the way Harry played it, it really worked. But what really brought it together was Harry has some pals that he grew up with in London that we played with. We did 5 or 6 shows in England opening for Nick Mason, and we used this bass player and drummer. And it was killer. And it was, and then we were at a show in Aylesbury, maybe, I can't remember. And some guy came up to the merch booth and said, "You guys remind me of Big Brother and the Holding Company and Neil Young and Crazy Horse." And in my head, and I said, "Man, we need to go into the studio with this band, just the 4 of us in one room." And we went to this killer studio in the countryside of England.
Vale Studios.
Which one? What was it called?
Vale. V-A-L-E. Okay. Yeah, Vale.
And we stayed there for 6 days. They cooked for us. We never left the house.
Wow.
And magic happened in that song in particular. Magic happened.
That's incredible. Well, you
and I hadn't really planned to play any B3, but he had a great B3 there. So I spent half a day or less, I think, like a couple of hours just going, "Hey, why don't I play some B3 on this?" And that was one of them, you know. This one.
I love all of the music in it. It's just like really, it plays for the song. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I love when parts like play for the song, and also there's something about the story that nothing gets in the way of itself. You know, like sometimes arrangements or even just the fidelity of a recording or something can get in the way of like the way a song speaks to somebody. But man, you guys just cleared everything out, and everything was essential that was on the song. I love the drum feel, by the way. So please tell that drummer, he played everything perfect.
He grew up, so I've known him since I joined my first job. Was in a Led Zeppelin tribute band called Boot Led Zeppelin when I was 19 or something. And at a show, some American kid came up to me about my age, 19 or 20, said, "Hey man, I'm in a Grateful Dead tribute band. We need a keyboard player. And I said, well, I mean, I know Touch of Grey, because that was a hit on MTV, but I don't know any Grateful Dead. And he said, listen to some, tell me if you like it, and here's my number. And I've been a dead. So Sean, the guitarist and the singer, was the dad. And then his son, who I think was 11 at the time, 11 or 12, was the drummer, Pat. And wow, he was monstrous. He grew up listening to Kreutzmann and Mickey Hart and Butch Trucks.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of American loosey-goosey kind of style of drumming, like the Allman Brothers and Grateful Dead. Anyway, so Pat, he was amazing at the time, and he's a grown-up now, obviously. But he's the guy that we need to get, and Larry obviously liked it and everything. So, yeah, that's him. That's
well, the style of the song just sounds so great, and I love when drummers play for the song, because
yeah,
it's real easy. There's this fine line where a drummer can overplay, and it's like when they play for the song, it's all feel. It was great. And the whole thing was awesome. And Harry, I love that you're into the Allman Brothers. I'm a diehard Allman Brothers fan.
Oh, I mean, they're right at the top for me.
You know, I just did a record. I actually recorded a new record on the same tape machine that Pink Floyd did The Wall on. It's a Stevens. It's the exact tape machine that they use. It's a Stevens tape machine. And most of the record is very Allman Brothers influenced. Like, I love the Allman Brothers. They're like one of my favorites. So,
yeah.
Big
props. Dwayne Allman just absolutely kills me. There's not many musicians who make me cry. You know, like, I love a lot of music, but it's rare that I'm reduced to tears. There's about three that can reduce me to tears. Neil Young's one of them, and Dwayne Allman is another one. His playing just...
Have you heard that record?
I don't know what it is.
It's Aretha Franklin, Dwayne Allman, Eric Clapton playing. I think it's called Lady Soul.
Oh, I don't know it.
No. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Yeah, it was recorded in Muscle Shoals. Yeah. So it's got, like, all the right elements of everything you want. It's a killer record. I'll send it.
Fantastic. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
So let me ask you, how many records do you guys have total together?
As a band, just the one. Yeah, we've got a second one, which is that song you just heard, and then two others are finished, and we finished mastering. They're done, ready to print. But we've got seven others that we've been separate for, and I just don't want to mix without Larry in the room with me. I just don't want to do it remotely. There's no rush to finish it. You know, I want to wait until we're back in the room together. Larry, so Larry lies on that sofa, and he's most, I'd say about 45% of the time he's asleep. The other 55%, you know, he's really listening. And I do all the engineering. So I sit here at the computer and I do all the production, the engineering, I should say. Right. We produce it. We do it together. And we go through everything with a fine-tooth comb. It's absolutely an even, you know, we both have our input. But that's his sofa there. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to finishing the other seven songs so that we can release our second record.
So you've recorded them, but you haven't mixed them and mastered them yet.
Correct. Awesome. Apart from three of them. Yeah.
Wow. And what is the creative process when you're making records? Are you recording to Pro Tools, Logic? Are you kind of doing stuff in some studios and then doing stuff at home, overdubs?
The first one was a bit of a mishmash. We had a day off, or maybe even 2 days off, when we were on tour in South America. So rather than, you know, lying around and doing nothing, we went into the studio because we liked the band. We recorded a bunch of the first record there, quite a lot of it. Then I bought the tapes back, well, the WAV files, you know. Like, I still think of it as tape, you know. We bought the tapes back here. And then Larry and I just worked on it here together. But we overdubbed. We didn't like a bunch of, I can't even remember now, but some of the guitars recorded over a bunch of the stuff that we'd done there, sort of re-recorded it. And then I think we re-recorded some of the bass and drums as well. So Fede and Jorge, who are our rhythm section in Argentina, we just wrote to them and said, hey, listen, a bunch of this stuff just sounds shit that we'd recorded at the studio. We want you to re-record it. So it was recorded in their home studios, LPA in South America, and then Larry, my studio here in LA. But the second one, as Larry said, it was just 6 days, four of us, everything was recorded in Vail Studios. So two very, very different experiences in terms of recording.
I love that you guys are shaking things up as far as where you're recording and how you're recording. I think that is also like, you know, a sign of great artists. It's like when you kind of put different variables as far as how you're recording and where, because some of that, you know, like it's about capturing. You can record the same song, same arrangement in 20 different studios, and it's all going to sound a little bit different because of something here or the time of day or whatever it is, you know. So sometimes it's kind of cool that you have like a mixed bag of kind of different environments that you're putting yourself in. Do you find is like the most challenging part of collaborating, whether it's timing, scheduling, distance? What do you find is the most challenging, like the biggest obstacle in how you collaborate?
I don't think there is any obstacle.
No, I don't. The only obstacle for me is the physical distance at the moment. You know, when Larry's in LA, he lives literally like 5 streets away.
So
he just comes over, even if he comes over for an hour, but he's normally here every day, you know, and has been for the last 4-5 years, you know, so we're always playing together and hanging out, you know, so the physical distance for me is the hardest part. I really, really miss Larry and him not being here and just hanging out and chatting and watching YouTube and listening to music and writing and playing together. I sort of can't wait to get back into it, you know, so that for me, that's the only hard thing. But apart from that, it's all pretty.
There's a great story that I like. A song called Wallflower. Yeah. I've lost track. I think it's on the second album. But
yeah, I think it must be, yeah.
I had a lyric going in my head for a long time, and Harry was just sitting at the piano going 4-1, 4-1, but way down low on the piano. And suddenly in my head, I heard my lyric fit perfectly with what he was playing.
Wow.
And that's how that song came together. So
just hang on, look, I can just play it. It's just these chords here. I remember exactly what I did. I went like this. I don't know if you can you hear that?
Yeah.
Wallflower.
That was it. So I literally just went, like that. And Larry went, oh, what was that? Do that again. And then we sat and wrote that whole song together. That was, if I remember, a total collaboration. We just sat and like did it together, didn't we, Larry?
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, yes, we did.
Yeah.
The harmonics, when you play that, what key is that in here?
C? E.
E. Yeah. Well, the harmonics down low there are totally different if you played that higher.
Yeah.
And it just resonated to me when you did that.
Yeah.
Because if you had gone 4-1 in a higher key, it might not have clicked, but it was just something about that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's beautiful. Yeah. Do we have that song to play or no?
You don't have that song. No.
All right, we'll play it next time we have you guys on.
Next time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
What do you want to play next? Let's play another one.
Sure. Larry, you can pick. That's fine.
Well, can we play Bang Bang? It has a bad word.
That's all right. We say shit and fuck all the time on this.
Good. Perfect. This song
is a very important song for us, and I can't tell you why, but there's a lot of story behind it. And I was up here in Maine, fooling around with the lyric, and once again I thought, I don't know if this is any good at all. I really don't know, but I.
Which was the lyric? Which one?
On Bang Bang that I didn't know was any good?
Yes, yeah.
Well, first of all, Bang Bang, Sonny and Cher have already done it.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of songs called Bang Bang.
Yeah,
I know. Up, so there's tons of them.
It didn't seem that, but the personal aspects of it, if I get a tingle down the back of my neck, I know I'm onto something.
Yeah.
And the personal aspects of the song really moved me. And then when we put all the pieces together, I can't tell you why, but this song is one of the special ones, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
When we play it live, there's just something about it.
That's awesome. Let's play it. Ronan, let's play Bang Bang.
1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. pattern across your fingers. If you don't take no shit from no one, where'd you get those scars on your face? There's a reason a gun's got a safety. What you doing? Shots ran. Tick tock, time's up. Bang bang. 16 frames per second. Time slowed down to a crawl. I'd rewind and change the ending if I. Shots rang, yeah. Tick tock, time's up. Bang bang. Don't shoot, hands up. Shots rang. Tick tock, time's up. Bang bang. I loved you. I watched over you. Sunshine, birds sang. Then you pull the trigger, and I run. Bang bang, Jesus wept, angels sang. Tick tock, time up. Bang bang.
Beautiful songs, man. Seriously.
Thank you.
Such
Thank
great you. Stuff. I definitely hear like a little bit of a Harry Connick Jr. thing meets like a Jelly Roll Morton with Chuck Lavelle, like piano licks there, man.
Yeah, I love
everything charming. Sounds so good. You guys really have like such a deep, soulful vibe together. I love how the sounds collaborate to make this very unique vibe of all the good things I like in music, personally.
Good
writing. The imagery and the lyrics are really fantastic. Really get.
I mean, for me, that one, Larry writes all the lyrics, you know. So for me, that's a particular favorite one for me lyrically.
I love the lyric you said. There's a reason a gun has a safety. I'm like, wow, what a great lyric. I mean, you see it, you feel it. It's got tension. It's got everything. And then you kind of release it with the title of the song. So
it's
really, really cool. It was, what do you call that? What do you call when there's sounds?
Onomatopoeia?
Onomatopoeia. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's got like that onomatopoeia. You're making that Batman comic lyric.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. And great piano playing. Man.
Oh, thank you.
Also moving the tune, propelling it. So
love
the vibe. Who played drums and bass on that?
So Pat Keneally is the drummer, and he's the one who I've been playing with since he was 11, you know, in the Grateful Dead tribute band. And then we were looking for, I had a bunch of ideas for bass players. But I asked Pat, you know, you can get the best bass player and best drummer in the world together. But if they're not like, if they don't gel, then it's terrible. You know, so rather than just getting, I know who I want to get to play on bass, I thought I'll ask Pat, because I knew I wanted Pat to do it. And so it was his recommendation. He's a guy called Tally Tro, and they play in a bunch of other bands together. And he said, if you need someone, he's your guy, you know.
You can hear and, the chemistry. That's the thing. It's like when great players have been playing for a long time, you know, great songs. And when you have guys that have been playing together, you can hear it. It's like a seasoning. So there's a very seasoned sound in how the songs come to life. It's very cool.
Yeah. We couldn't have made it sound as good as it does without them. They're both just so good. It was just a joy to play with them, and so musical, and they both sing unbelievable BVs.
Wow.
You know, I'm not a great singer, so to have them there, you know, Pat does this unbelievably high falsetto, and then Tally does that bang bang at the end, you know, and they were just so good. We want to go on the road with them so badly, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys gel very well together. It's really nice.
Yeah, you know, if money were no object, hopefully we'll be at a point where we can afford a bunch more personnel. You know, we want a Memphis horns.
Right.
You know, we want a tenor and a trombone and a trumpet, and we want some BVs as well, some girls. You know, a couple of girls plus Pat and Tally and. You know, be a big like soul funk band. That's really
I did this song on this newest record where it's like a Ray Charles song, and I had a 6 or 7 piece horn section, and I was just like, man, I wish I could take this on the road. There's nothing like, I feel like music, the more people you add, the cooler and more fun it becomes. So I totally get that. But then when you think of logistics, it's like, how are we going to put 20 people on a bus or in a hotel or get them all on? You know, it's like, it's expensive. It's very expensive.
Yeah, that's the fact. That's it. You know, you're limited by expense, you know.
But, you know, I have to say, there's something really organic about how you guys create music together that, you know, I think it's when people can make it sound good on its own like that, that's everything. It's like sometimes too many people can crowd something that's really genuine like that. So I love that.
Yeah.
You know, everything is essential and that has a vibe too. Harry, I've got to ask you a daunting question that you know is probably on the horizon. How do you, you know, your dad is Roger Waters of Pink Floyd. How do you show him songs without going, gee, dad, you know, like any kind of, you know, getting any kind of musical opinion from him? It's got a heavy weight.
Good question. I tend not to over the years. I sort of learned not to, you know. Although recently I did actually, I sent him some MP3s. I think I sent him the EP, basically, which is the 3 that I've sent you. And, he's normally quite sort of taciturn, you know. I think I got an email back going, "I like they're good, yeah, good." Something like that. And that was it, you know. But that's more than I normally do.
Right, right. So, you know, he's probably a tough act to kind of like impress because
he's a hard man to please, shall we say?
But you know that you're doing something right. Those words weigh heavy when he gives you those words. So that's pretty awesome. Well, I mean, I don't know how you cannot love the music. You're doing something very successful that I love is, you know, you're the heir of this, you know, rock and roll legend, but you're doing your own sound. You've kind of created a new vibe and path. And, you know, Larry, the way you kind of collaborate your songs with what Harry's doing, it's a sound. It's got a very classic sound. And I like, you know, everything I've heard so far is just really organic and beautiful, man. It's just beautiful music. So job well done. Well, what are we playing next is the question. What are we playing next, Larry?
Hey, you know, let's play the song Wanted by the State of Mississippi. And I was just sitting here thinking about influences. And you know who one of my favorite guitar players is? Bobby Womack.
Oh, yeah.
He is truly a singer-songwriter. You know, you might classify him as R&B, but he's a singer-songwriter. He's a folk singer, a very, very funky folk singer.
Yep.
And a great funky guitar player. And those are the guys. The reason I didn't listen to Pink Floyd wasn't like I avoided it. I just was so heavy into R&B. And those guitar players, Cornell Dupree, Bobby Womack, Eddie Hinton, from Muscle Shoals, I couldn't get enough of it, and that's all I listened to. So this song is, and then the beauty of working, I've never worked with a keyboard player before. Harry's the first, you know, I've recorded with them.
Right.
But not closely. And it's a pleasure. And it frees me up a lot. And so I brought this kind of funky lick to Harry, and then he does the funky piano thing, and it becomes this, as I said to him, yeah, it's bigger than the both of us. It's this, his influences and mine, and then it just becomes this third thing.
Yeah.
Which is the combination of those.
You totally hear it. It's got such a life. And, you know, I love the extremes you guys are exploring in the sound that's still kind of staying true to the style, you know, because that's everything. When you can do that, that's, you're exploring all the realms of it. So it's beautiful. It's really great. Tell me a little backstory about lyrically what's going on in this song. Paint us a picture.
Well, some of the stuff I can't talk about. But some of those that I love close to me who have numerous warrants for their arrest influence the song. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Should we draw our own conclusions and just play the song then?
Just play the song.
Yeah. All right. And you heard the band. Let's play the song.
By the state of Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Good, you can smell the stank on it, man.
So good. Thank you,
man. I gotta give you a huge compliment because it's very reminiscent of one of my favorite bands from New Orleans, the Meters. It's just got
we love the Meters.
Funk, man. It is, yeah, it's got that funk, it's got that groove, and absolutely awesome, man. Please don't ever stop making music together. The world needs this, man. It's like, you know, this style is. It's a classic sound. It's one of the fabrics of what makes this country so great. And I really mean it. It's like that sound, that vibe is what makes America so great. And New Orleans is a big heart and soul of this country for so many reasons, for jazz, for the cuisine, everything, the vibe. So everything you guys are drawing from, it's all heart. You guys can hear it. So please never stop making music. Next time you're in LA, Larry, I've got to get you both in a studio called Hard Drive Analog and Digital. It's all analog. And man, you guys got to record this sound on analog tape.
Yeah.
Love that.
I know.
That's where it breathes the most, man. All those.
I know what you mean.
It is it, man. So next time when you're done with Maine after the pandemic, we'll get you guys in that studio because
I don't dare go to LA right now.
Well, you know what? You're safe in Maine, but what is next for the both of you? And also, where can people find your music if they want to download your music?
Good question. The first record is on where it should be, Amazon. You can buy the CD on Amazon if you want to buy the CD. And what else? We have a gig coming up on August 22nd, 8 p.m. Pacific time, and maybe you
Eastern
can,
time.
8 p.m. Eastern, that's right. 5 p.m. Pacific.
5 Pacific.
Get it in your calendar. Don't Pacific. Miss the bus,
yeah,
exactly. Larry. Don't
yeah, yeah, really.
Hey, it's 11 midnight where I am.
Yeah, yeah. It's remote.
It's 8 p.m. Where you are, Larry.
Yeah, it's 8 p.m. where you are. It's 5 p.m. where we are. 5 p.m. Pacific. But you know, it's a shame that the technology doesn't exist whereby Larry and I can actually play simultaneously, you know, remotely. It's just not possible because there's not enough bandwidth on the planet, you know, to do it. So we're recording, you know, a set of material, and we'll play that, but we'll be live like this Zoom. So we'll chat to the crowd and whatever, and then play some music, you know, for you guys. So that's on the 22nd of August. And we'll be releasing our new record very shortly. You know, well, as soon as this is over, we'll finish it.
And I want to tour on the new record. I don't want to put it out without us touring because that's where it really happens.
Yeah, of course.
You play it live, you meet the people.
Yeah,
nothing better. Almost, yeah, I mean, it's just when you meet the audience, they remember you and you remember them. And the take home the album is almost like a souvenir from the show.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for us to get out and play live.
Me neither.
And that's all I want to do is be out. I was in Europe when playing shows when the whole thing came to a halt. And I'll be glad when they won't let Americans in Europe now.
So. Yeah, we're banned everywhere.
Yeah, probably for good reason.
Well, the crazy thing is I wish Zoom or any of these kind of virtual mediums, like the new version of Pro Tools, I haven't used this before, but Harry, you could actually record in live time, and Larry, you can record in live time, and you'll see it on each other's computers, what the other's doing in live time. But the technology has not, it has not kind of entered into Zoom and all those because it's just too new for this stuff. But man, hopefully it will get to that point because it would be great to see you guys always collaborating no matter what sides of the planet you're on. And one more time, McNally Waters, spell it just so people know where to find you, McNally. WXPRS.com.
Exactly. That's right. That's the website. We're on Instagram and we have a Facebook page. And then our website is McNallywaters.com. So you can go there for all news and, you know, links to buy our music there as well.
And you want to promote Progstock again? Tell us all about Progstock.
All right. So the Progstock virtual series, which is what we've got available right now, you can find all the details at progstock.com. It's just like Woodstock, but with Prague at the beginning.
Very progressive.
Exactly. Actually, it came from the fact that at the initial festival back in 2016, which was before Progstock existed, it was raining cats, dogs, sheep. It was outside. It was crazy. Wow. So it was very, very Woodstocky. And all of a sudden somebody said, call it Progstock. And it stuck.
That's perfect. I love it.
So for the virtual series, you go to stageit.com. I don't know if you should be familiar with Stageit. You've done a show on there with me, Nikki. So stageit.com/progstock, and you'll find the whole roster for August right now. And you'll find McNally Waters there on August 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and everywhere in between all around the world. We have an international audience. It's really wonderful. It's been going well so far. Last weekend, we started it off with Rachel Flowers, Julie Slick from Adrian Ballou's band, and Peter Jones of Tiger Moth Tales came at us from the UK. Awesome. Great, great stuff. And so we've got something going on every Saturday. The whole month of August is out there. We're doing shows for November, for October, September, November. We're just going to keep going until artists.
And it's amazing that you're doing that.
Until artists can get back on the actual road as opposed to the virtual road.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, it's important. It's like these are the times where things like this carry way more merit and weight for musicians. So it just keeps everybody pushing.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Music, because that's really what it's about. And guys, thank you for taking the time to do this interview.
Thank you for having us.
I'm going to have you guys again. When you do your next release, please shoot me an email. I'd love to have you guys come back. I usually have the guests that I really love come back every 9 or 10 months and promote more stuff, because you guys are great. Seriously, the music is amazing. And I love everything you're drawing from. And I love all the songs, styles, lyrics, stories. You guys are tremendous.
Thank you very much.
Great work, man. Really nice. Great work.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Nikki,
for having us.
All right, guys. Well, I will definitely tune in August 22nd, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Right, Ann?
That's right.
All right.
Stageit.com/progstock.
Awesome, guys. Well, thank you again for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we'll make some music together at some point. Okay, guys?
Sounds good.
Take care, guys.
Awesome. Good night, everyone.
Night, guys. Bye.